Welcome to the Aesthetic City podcast. In this show, we aim to discover how to go forward and create a more livable, beautiful, and healthy built environment. I'm Ruben Hansen, your host and founder of the Aesthetic City. Today's episode was recorded on site in London, and the guest of this interview is a skilled stonemason and entrepreneur promoting the use of natural stone as load-bearing structures. He's the co-founder of the Structural Stone Company, part of the Stonemasonry Company, which is based in London. And with his company, he's proving that natural stone is still one of the most versatile, sustainable, and beautiful materials available to humans. I was very excited for this interview because I share his enthusiasm for stone. And I feel that there is a lot of untapped opportunity in this material, literally buried beneath our feet. So without further ado, please welcome Pierre Bidot.
Yeah, thank you so much for having this interview.
Okay.
Could you please introduce yourself, who you are, what you do?
Of course, yes. So I'm Pierre Bidot of the Stone Masonry Company, and I'm the co-founder also of the Structural Stone Company, a company dedicated to putting back load-bearing stone into a modern construction.
Wow, yeah. So, could you tell a bit about the benefits of working with stone? Why is stone such a good material?
Well, so stone is something which is ubiquitous. You know, it's everywhere around us. We walk on it every day, and it's a material that we have been working with in the last 20,000 years. So we've got a good knowledge on how to approach that material, and it proves also, of course, an extremely resilient material. You can build solidly with it. It can go through the test of times with very little blemish. However, all that need, of course, to take into consideration that it's used in a certain thickness and with a certain potency. If we are talking now about the stone cladding, that has been very, very popular in the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. Of course, you cannot compare the strength of a 30 mil thick stone and 300 mil thick stone.
Yeah, yeah. So, and how long have you been working with stone, and what is the background of the company?
I am myself a stonemason, and I've been a stonemason for 30 years. And the background of the company is very simple, is that it was created by two French stonemasons more than 14 years ago, with at its core the use of the keystone craft, which is mostly the stone shaping, how to properly design a stone structure. And we identified a niche market, which was the stone staircase. And by getting into the stone staircase market, we became very much aware that we needed to team with structural engineers to understand how those structures work. And then we very much also realized that in the last 50 or 70 years, stonemasons had lost completely their ability to design, engineer, and build load-bearing stone structure. So to reconnect with engineers, structural engineers, made us suddenly kickstarting a better understanding from our material through the lens of engineering.
Yeah. And what has that allowed to do with your company? What is what is the potential that you see in stone nowadays for the modern construction world?
Well, it's very simple, is that for a very long time, load-bearing stone masonry had been used very much on its own, all right? Mm-hmm. We have this sort of vision of traditional Osmanian buildings or Gothic cathedral, but they rely a lot on their mass and on their thick stone walls. Of course, very much a traditional handset of material. We believe very much on the prefabrication of load-bearing stone element, and that would be reinforced off-site. And so that if I take, for example, a stone columns that will be coming in three or four different pieces and will take quite a while to be installed on site. By having it done in as one single element, so going from a sort of, as I said, traditional setting, hand setting, you will gain a huge amount of time with most of your elements, may they be flat arches, beams, even arches, to be prefab at the at a workshop and brought on site as one single element.
Yeah. What about the sustainability of stone compared to concrete? Because concrete uses a lot of, you need to use a lot of energy to create it, Portland cement. So it is has a huge CO2 impact. So how about stone?
So I think first we need to go back a bit on our track. First of all, whatever we built with around us come from quite a violent activity. Okay, architecture is a violent activity. Okay, you need to cut, you need to dig, you need to extract, you need to crush, and so on. And I think first of all we should look at how many holes are we digging to get our material out of the ground, okay? Yeah. And of course, the very first one is that for stone, you just have more or less to dig only one, okay? Yeah. I will accept that you need, of course, sand for the mortars and so on, but roughly you are looking at only one hole. How many holes do you need to dig for concrete?
At least three, I would.
So you would have, of course, the aggregates.
Yeah.
You've got the cement that you've got to produce from lime being crushed, so that's another holes. Usually they are not the same aggregates. You need sand, but you need iron.
Yeah,
Because it's reinforced. Yeah. Yeah. So you're already having quite a big impact on the fabrication.
Yeah.
Just on the impact on the landscape. Okay.
Yeah.
Now landscape as well. If we are talking about landscape, stone quarry are sometimes under much more scrutiny than concrete, than cement quarries.
Mm.
And they look a lot more. They are usually a lot more beautiful to look at compared to a big hole blasted in the ground that concrete usually have to do.
Mm.
And also don't forget that stone comes also from mines, which are underground and that you don't see. So if you take some Portland or Bath stone, they're all coming from underground quarries.
Oh, right.
Now, if we go back just for energy consumption, a lot of the quarry now are using electrical or electrical system to extract stone. Okay,
yeah.
It's giant chainsaw, up to 6 to 7 meters chainsaw that's going to through hydraulically going through the material, or it can be wires, tungsten cable wires with diamonds bits on it that will go through the mountain, again always using electricity. So as much as I would say 50% of modern quarry used electrical power and purely electrical. There is another 50% who still use diesel engine to run that electrical system. So there is still a bit of progress to be done. Yeah.
But it could all be electrical.
It could be completely all electrical. Yes.
Yeah. So in essence, it could be basically almost a CO2-free building material if you also use electric trucks to bring to the building site. And
Completely, yes. I mean, even if you go with some of our colleagues in North America where some electricity are generated by hydropower, then you've got a completely green material.
Yeah. So if it's such a green, amazing material, why aren't we embracing this en masse?
Well, it's quite simple. In the last 50 to 70 years, the concrete industry has made a large investment in producing cement. Those large companies, through their investments, are not that keen on getting stone as an alternative material.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, for the last 20, let's say 10 years, they've got the CLT and wood industry, who's been starting nibbling at their feet.
So if stone is such an amazingly sustainable material, and carbon friendly and carbon free, why don't we adopt it en masse as a building material?
I think it's the concrete industry have been extremely efficient in building infrastructure for the grinding of limestone to make it into cement. And those large investments mean that they are very keen to retain a certain part of the market.
Yeah.
Against that, you've got the stone industry, which share, of course, some of his holes digging into the ground with the concrete industry.
Hmm.
And sometimes some quarry owner in the past have been keener to sell their quarry for the aggregates or cement fabrication than using it as a material, as a stone, as a building material. Also, you've got to realize that as much stone has got a fantastic history, it's been a blessing and a curse. All right. It's that people tend to see stone as a heritage material.
Mm.
Okay. And as such, seeing something used only on grand mansion or cathedrals or so forth. And I think it's something that for us has made our life a lot trickier because I think we see stone as an expensive material, especially in heritage environment. And I think it's down to the stone industry to revert to a better communication. And pushing that sustainable element forward.
So there's some things to unpack here. One of them was that concrete and stone quarries sometimes use the same pit. So they sometimes mine limestone and also lime for the mortar in the same pit. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So what happened is that stone can be all traditionally extracted using large machines, or can be blasted a lot quicker and faster for concrete. Yeah. So we share very much the same ground.
Yeah.
Now, something that people are starting to get aware of it is that, of course, you need a lot of energy to transform that stone into cement.
Yeah.
And for example, if you take in the 1950s in France, the French government commissioned a report to see what was the most available and affordable material to rebuild France. Okay, we had a huge amount of affordable housing to rebuild in northern France, and the result was quite staggering. Is that for 1 cubic meter of concrete, you needed 250 kilograms of coal.
Wow.
For 1 cubic meter of stone, with exactly the same compression strength in both material, you just need 10 kilos of coal. So, of course, the French government decided to do was to commission quarries, tool manufacturers, to pivot the whole stone industry, which had been dying in just pre-war, and to retool it completely and pivot completely on heavy industrialization of the extraction of stone, which provided at some point, the legend was that in France, while rebuilding the affordable housing stock, a stone was extracted in the morning and fitted in the afternoon.
Hmm.
Okay, you had a huge amount of buildings being built from scratch with load-bearing stone facade.
Oh, wow. After the war?
After the war, from 1950 to 1970. Hmm. That's very important, 1950 to 1970, because as soon as we see middle of the 70s, just after the petrol crisis, the cost of energy going down, you can see concrete going up.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The use of concrete going up. And don't forget also that another big problem was, I won't point out just the concrete industry, but, you know, the car industry. The thing is, with town needing more cars, you need more parking spaces. So if you are in Paris and you've been building in stone for the last 20 years in the 50s, people now need underground parking.
Yeah.
So what are they going to be done with? Concrete.
Yeah.
And if the concrete builders is already in the place to build that concrete car park, he must have said also, you know, why don't we carry on and build the rest in concrete? So I think that's a little argument that had to be had to the use of concrete is the easiness of suddenly saying from lower ground to top, I can have a single material.
Yeah, it's very versatile. Yeah. Is it possible to do underground parking with low-bearing stone in some way?
Or? Well, first of all, I would discourage people to do underground parking. That's a start. I think it's extremely expensive. We could do them in stone if we really wanted.
With vaults and
so forth. Is it really something we want? I don't think so. The regulation now are you know, codes and regulation are so much into favor of steel and concrete that's the other problem. The regulation is that we do not have a proper load-bearing stone code as we've got for an Euro code for steel or concrete.
Mm. Yeah. That's another whole topic. One thing I also want to come back to was you said that the image of stone is that it's a heritage material and that has also limited its use. So in other ways, it is also still very useful material and apparently you can get it out of the ground really quickly. That natural stone is seen as a heritage material.
Yes.
And that is a problem for adoption. That is pretty amazing because if that is really only one of the problems, then I think it's just that we see it, that's kind of absurd that we change how we build because we see a material as being heritage.
Yes. You know, as much as form follow function, form follow fashion.
Yeah.
if you've got a material which is extremely, as Le Corbusier called it, a liquid stone, and so easy to put in to put in place, it's going to be adopted very quickly. And don't forget that through two world wars, also there were a lot of artisans and craftsmen who died into the trenches, and so you suddenly had a highly skilled labor force who just disappeared. In two world wars. So you need a material that's going to be fast and easy to implement. And concrete was very much that. But also, as to my example from the 1950s, very much also in the 50s, where in fact the stone was just cut straight away on the, at the quarry, put onto a lorry, and fitted by two laborers who knew how to put one stone on top of each other. Yeah. So the efficiency was there also. And at some point, I think they were up to 1 square meter of stone fitted every 3 minutes in some of the jobs in France. So the saying is, as much as it's been sold as a heritage material, it's been sold with the price of a heritage material. Okay, so it became suddenly a sort of also a luxury. Which is not. So stone was and have been always a commodity, okay? Because with stone, with local stone, you can build and a barn and a cathedral. It's still what sort of stone you are going to use, how much selection you are going to use to the making of that building. So it's extremely desirable to have had this, unfortunately, stickers on our back of heritage material.
But that's fascinating to me. So what can we do to one, make stone cheaper, and two, to reintroduce it as a building material? What could we do in the ideal situation?
So first of all, in the last 20 years, there has been a quite deep resurgence of use of stone in France through the Atelier Perrodin impulse, where stone from the south of France, which cannot really be used in cladding, cannot be really used in flooring, but as a good compressive strength, have been reintroduced in affordable housing scheme. Straight for the last 20 years, especially more 10 years, and in the last 5 years, there's a huge amount of new architects who decided to look at the use of stone, which I call myself sort of unsexy stone, which, you know, cannot be used for cladding in rich area from the city of London to busy district in New York. And that can be used as a pure construction material. That means that those stone becomes extremely affordable suddenly. Because nobody wanted them in the last 20 years. And because of that, their price are quite low.
Oh, wow.
Very low. Now, the other things we could do as well is, of course, I would say, again, those are big numbers, but most of the time, quarry output of material sold is only 10%. Even in some quarry, 3%. So you've got leftover 90 to 95% of stone unused. There are blocks that are mechanically good, but which through the fashion over the time or through the fact that they, as again I'm saying that, visually challenged, they become unloved stone. So you've got a huge park of stone that are not being used. That can go from a beautiful granite from the north of Europe with just a line of white in the middle, we suddenly make it totally unusable. So it's down to us to identify a quarry who's got this stock, who are keen to say, you know what, we have an ethos also to follow. Let's not have that stone just straight through sent as an aggregate. Let's see what we can do with new technology. Because in fact, what we are doing at the structural stone company is that we take all these blocks of different sizes of unloved stone, and through our technology of reinforcement and post-tensioning, we are bringing them not anymore as a small handset blocks of stone, but completely pre-manufactured system that speed up the process of erection in on-site.
Oh, fantastic. So you can recombine stone, reuse it, tension it.
Yeah, that's it, yes. We used all that unloved material, reshape it with, again, it is through sheer rationalization. So there will not be fancy molding or finishes or so on. It will be very, very raw and honest, like that barn we might enjoy in the middle of the Cotswolds or in the south of France in Luberon or even in Belgium in the landscape. So
which can be beautiful.
Which, of course, is beautiful. Yeah. You know, I think it's the it's the raw beauty of your material.
Yeah. So a very short in-between question before I go to the last one, perhaps. Will we ever run out of stone?
So I do believe, I think it's at least, there is 15 miles deep crust of stone under our feet. So that's quite a bit of we've got all around the earth. So we've got a bit of margin. I think also we've got to see it not anymore as a human size, but as as a bigger bigger timeline. You know, our timeline is very much, you know, 100 years for us.
Yeah.
But as we speak, some stone is being redone. At the bottom of the ocean, you've got some dead organism who are gathering and starting the new limestone, sedimentation limestone. So will we run out of stone? No, we will not run out of stone. And most importantly, we can reuse the stone that we have already here.
Yeah.
Because any stone building is a quarry to be.
Yeah, like the pyramids were used for quarry.
Exactly. You know, the local amphitheater in south of France was going to be dismantled to build the part of a Gothic church. And the Gothic church that was out of fashion was going to be reused to build a Renaissance palazzo somewhere in Italy. So, again, just be careful. I'm talking about solid stone, you know, big solid stone walls with a fantastic thermal thermal mass, with a very extensive thermal mass. We are talking about material which, by their thickness, allow you to be reused again and again and again.
Yeah.
You know, tomorrow you can dismantle St. Paul cathedrals and rebuild affordable housing around London.
Yeah.
And not that I'm asking masterpiece to be reused, but what I mean is we should consider this element of reuse of the material, which is much easier with stone.
Yeah.
You know, in a certain thickness rather than cladding or flooring.
Yeah. So if you build buildings from big stone blocks, they're like Lego blocks, you can also disassemble and reuse.
Completely.
Yeah, that's fun.
You know, the project we did with Aminta and Clerkenwell Close in 2016 are those massive beams and lintels that have been extracted from the ground and just simply put on top of each other like the... 2.0 Stonehenge system.
Wow.
But that can be dismantled if we wanted, you know, tomorrow. Yeah.
Final question. What are the most annoying myths around stone that you all often...
Well, you already gave me quite a few to talk about, Ruben. I think there's no annoying myth. I mean, this annoying myth are annoying myths for any other material.
Yeah.
I think our civilization, for the last 200 years, we've been so much disconnected on the way things are made. If you do not, if you forget about how things are made, if you don't understand how they are made, you don't know what is at stake.
Yeah.
And then everything becomes not what they used to be, which is sacred. You know, things that's coming from the ground, anything that surrounds us, our sacred material, and as such, we should be using them with intelligence.
Yeah.
And most, it's really the fact that if you don't know how things are made, you do not care, or you care less. And I think that is a big problem.
Yes,
is that we are in a society, and I don't mean in a society, civilization of the last 100 years, where we do care less about things.
Yeah. Very good point.
And as myth. The myth of stone being expensive, I would say that's not the most important one, because I cannot blame the layman or to think about that, because it's true that we tend to see it now a lot more into a fancy
luxury
retails and so on. But I think maybe it's the things about its strength.
Mm.
That's the you know, most of the stones, building stone, I've got more or less the same strength as concrete.
Yeah.
You know, you can even have stone three times as strong as concrete, which nobody wants. You know, there is some larvae from Oslo, around Oslo, which nearly 160 MPa compressive strength. You know, that's mean that stone is very much used to do worktops marble work and so on. So you are using a stone 180 MPa just to cut your tomatoes on, which is topsy-turvy. We are living in a world where, you know, our priority are need to be reassessed.
Yeah, that's also a very good one. Maybe one question I forgot to ask earlier, which I can put in between. I also saw on your website you have stone bricks.
Yes. So that's through the impulsion of Aminta, the British architect, who, looking at the way plannings are done in the UK, there is a huge emphasis given to bricks.
Hmm.
Okay, since 1666, since the burning of London, bricks have been at the center of the at one of the main material of use in central London. However, people tend to forget that stone was very much the other material used in the reconstruction of London. The fact that now we are using a brick, handset brick, which in fact was great in the 1700, when you didn't want to have huge crane to lift elements and so on. But now it's a bit ridiculous to have to do this hand setting, which is just a veneer, because most of the time the bricks are not even load bearing. Just want to make as low carbon as possible those bricks using stone. So I think it's a very and good and fair point for me. However, I think that we've got cranes, we've got extraction system that allow us to get large modules of stone, large blocks, so we should use it a lot more than what we are using now. It's an interesting discussion, this brick issue, because I think bricks are taking over the fabric of our cities, especially in Britain. Maybe it's a question of marketing and communication efficiency that the brick business has compared to stone.
Yeah, I can imagine that. This has been extremely enlightening. Thank you so much for
no
this
problem.
Interview.
Pleasure.
I can't wait to see more stone buildings in our
cities.
Yes,
we've got a few coming up in the next few years, coming from community centers to universities to affordable housing scheme. It's something that south of Spain have been looking at a lot, anything to do with low-rise mixed-use project. But in France, a lot are now looking at hybrid buildings, for low-rise, stone facade, CLT frame internally.
Yeah, wood.
So put stone in compression, wood inflection.
Yeah.
Again, it's not a new idea.
Yeah.
But it is just something we need to look at again to offer for certain kind of project a sort of alternative to the steel and concrete.
Yeah.
And with stone and wood. And I think that would be a beautiful story of natural building going back in the modern building.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Aesthetic City podcast. For more information about the Stonemasonry Company, find links to their website and their page on X in the description below. If you like our content and want to support what we do, you can support us in various ways. The easiest way is to give this podcast a favorable review. Another way to support this podcast is to share it with colleagues and friends. You can also follow us on X, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or our Substack newsletter. And finally, the ultimate way to support The Aesthetic City is to become a patron. Find the Patreon link in the description. For more information about this platform, visit theaestheticcity.com. Thank you, until next time.